today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Patrick, maybe we should get Kevin involved in this intro.
No, he's too busy right now.
What's he doing?
I have him picking all the brown M&Ms out of that bowl.
Please, guys, can I be done now?
Okay, on this episode of Classic Van Halen, we're going to do two albums really quickly here, and there's a reason for that.
Okay, what is that reason?
One reason is that we only have five episodes to do, and there's six albums from this era with David Lee Roth, and we want to make sure we get in the sixth of the studio albums, because that's an important record.
That's a super important one.
Right. And so we're going to kind of hit Fair Warning and Diver Down kind of quickly here.
Okay.
The other reason for it is being they're probably in some ways maybe the least interesting albums. Now, some people might dispute that about Fair Warning. We can talk about that a little bit. I don't know that anyone would really dispute that about Diver Down.
Right.
Yeah.
So, this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I am Patrick Foss.
And with us all this week is
Kevin Spain.
Kevin, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We are talking about Van Halen albums because it's the 40th anniversary of the band's debut in 1978. And so we thought we would talk about their classic lineup. And some would people would might say the only true Van Halen lineup.
The only true Halen,
With David Lee Roth back in the day.
Those people probably can't drive 55. Yeah.
Probably can't. I mean, it is. And I mean, especially if you grew up with Van Halen, it is the true. I will say that if you lose your singer and you want to keep your band going, you could do worse than Sammy Hagar as the replacement.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. He provided another guitar player, and you know he can sing. So you know you could do worse, but you also couldn't do any different than David Lee Roth than Sammy Hagar.
No, you couldn't. Although Sammy brought some good tequila.
He did bring some tequila. Yes, he did.
So it's funny you mention this because we have a call that actually mentions a little bit of Sammy Hagar. We put the word out on our social media that we were going to be talking about Van Halen, and we asked people to tell us about their favorite Van Halen songs. And we have two callers actually who mentioned the same song. Let me play the first one here. It's a voice some of you may recognize.
Jim and Patrick, Van Halen, some EPJ. Can sink his teeth into. Oh, I'm still in beautiful Pasadena every day, birthplace of Van Halen. But I've learned a lot of things from you boys. Keep it brief. But the key to David Lee Roth Van Halen, I was just listening to Sammy Van Halen all day because I was a little too young to appreciate David. But the key I just realized is the top three songs are ones where he's talking. Panama, I reach down between my legs, ease the seat back, and then it's pretty much like Hot for Teacher. I don't know if there's talking, but that's up there. Everybody Wants Some would almost be my choice, but I figure somebody's going to pick Everybody Wants Some because I like the way the lineman and the sagging. But we could do a whole list of like who's more misogynistic in their lyrics, Sammy or Dave. But my choice is definitely Unchained, their last, like, rock nugget album. No singles, just rock nuggets. Like, you know, Fair Warning, I think, is the name of the album. But it's just, it's choice. But it's got the talking. It's got the best talking. And in brief research, he's like, He's talking to Ted Templeman, their producer, and he's like, "Come on, Dave, give me a break." It's just it's their best rocker, Unchained. Thanks, boys. But everybody likes that song, not Unchained, but Unchained is the choice. For the Dave era. Are we doing Sammy era? Come on, boys. Don't be prejudiced for Dave. I don't know what this all means anyway. Nobody informed Echo Park Jimmy.
Beautiful.
So regular listeners of the show might recognize Echo Park Jimmy.
He's the master.
He's an old friend of mine from high school, Jim Petrillo, and now that's the nom de plume he has chosen for this show.
Fantastic.
And he does live out in the L.A. area.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, I mean, Echo Park is a neighborhood out there. And I guess the Pasadena, I think that's part of his whole dog walking
area.
Routine, right? Mm-hmm. He walks dogs for a living.
Palin's old stomping ground.
Yep. Which we forgot to mention. I mean, we did mention they're from Pasadena, but a suburban band.
Yeah, right? That's right. Totally
rocking
suburban.
The suburbs.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yes. I think it's very appropriate.
Now I get the connection. Yeah. I see. All right. That's why it's on the show.
All right. So he mentioned Unchained. And before we play it.
Hey, guys. It's Kevin Bartlett out of Forest Park, Illinois. Call him again. I saw the tweet about favorite David Lee Roth era Van Halen, and I absolutely had to call in because now you're talking my language. I saw Van Halen first time was in 1981. I was 14 years old. It's the first concert that my parents let me go to by myself, and that was the Fair Warning tour. Unchained by far is the best Van Halen song. It's got classic David Lee Roth screaming. It's got a little bit of a rap in there. A little bit of, David, talking the way he does. And it's got blistering Eddie guitar licks. So Unchained, put it at the top of the list. Talk to you guys later. Take care. All right.
I think that sort of takes you back to the first two albums. Unchained
right.
is a lot like he's talking about love mm-hmm. and the way that the song is fairly hard rock driving throughout. It's I don't know that I would say it's my favorite David Lee Roth song like your buddy did, but I think it's the best song on this album, and it's sort of, to me it's back to the old Van Halen.
It has a certain mystique about it. I think this song Unchained is a favorite, as you heard two people call in about, of like the real fans of this band. It's like one of those songs where like you can sort of test other people who say they're fans if they name Unchained.
Yeah,
right?
That's a bluffer.
It. But the thing about Fair Warning is there's a real contrast between this and the next album, Diver Down, which is this. This is where Eddie is really trying to assert more authority over the sound and the
right.
direction of the band.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to move away from it just being perceived as sort of a pop band and the pop sound and recording songs that, sort of like where the A&R guy would listen to it and say like, that's a hit song,
yes,
right?
Sir.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He wants to make more of a real album. This album overall is, more experimental in some ways and, maybe a little bit darker than some of their other stuff. And, it still ended up selling 2 million
right.
copies. By Van Halen standards, it was the least successful of that period.
Yeah.
But he wanted to be more artistic with what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. It's the first use of synthesizers and keyboards, I think, come on this album. And you're right, this is where he starts wanting to do some different music. And I think that's sort of the beginning of the rift that he has with Dave.
That's exactly it.
Because he wants to go in sort of a different direction. And Dave is just like, no, man, we got to put out some hits and we got to stay on top. And I think this is sort of the beginning of the end for them.
It's the difference between the artist and the entertainer.
Yeah.
And you know which side each of those guys is going to be on as it goes, right?
And you can reflect that on the cover of this album, too. It's totally different from the other ones, right? It's got sort of a painting reflecting some sort of inner conflict or torment, right?
I can't remember what this is, but this was not like commissioned for the album. This is actually like a real painting that they took, like just a portion of it and put it on here. But yes, again, it reflects it sort of being an artistic work.
That's right.
Not just, you know, a rock album.
Right. David Lee Roth is not doing the splits anywhere on the on the outside of the album. Yeah.
And while you bring up the vinyl, I think you wanted to talk about this, the vinyl collection.
So you've got the full sort of compliment set here, yet I noticed each one has a $1 sticker on the outside.
Almost.
Yet, is there one that doesn't?
I'll tell you.
But they're all in really nice shape, and it's quite a haul there. How did that come about?
So here's the funny thing about this. I truly, truly love this era Van Halen. Like,
you do.
I really do.
He does.
But I'm going to admit something here, though. At the time, I was not a huge fan. I became a fan of the band with the album 1984,
Okay.
which we're going to talk about tomorrow.
Yeah.
And the copy of 1984 that we have here is the original copy that I bought
in 1984.
So that won't have a dollar sticker on it,
no,
Patrick.
It won't.
I bought that one and listened to it a lot. So I was in high school then, and I listened to that a lot, to the point where, I don't know if you have this feeling, Patrick, but you have certain albums that you think of as sort of like your friends.
Yes. Oh, I do. A lot of friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those and that was one of my friends, you know, because that was one of those albums that I would sit in my bedroom with headphones, the big black headphones on, and just sit and listen to it at home after school or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that was a time in your life where like something like that kind of comforts you, right?
And gets,
you know, and it felt like time well spent. But anyway, so that's the only original.
Okay.
My original. Now, I don't know if these may be original pressings.
Some
these other ones
maybe.
I have.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I had 1984 on vinyl. And then I bought, after that, I went back and I bought Diver Down on cassette.
Oh, okay.
So I had that cassette.
Mm-hmm.
But the others I never owned. I just kind of knew all the hits off of them.
Always on the radio.
Yeah, it was always on the radio. Yeah. I never really got it. And it wasn't until only in the last couple of years that I acquired these vinyl.
Yeah.
And because I became even more and more of a fan of Van Halen over the years. And the reason being, this is almost sort of counterintuitive, because they were essentially writing, their main audience was like teenagers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they were writing music for the kids the way rock and roll was sort of meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they embraced that. But yet I found that as I got older and became sort of more of a music geek, the thing I really fascinated me about this band that, you know, may not be sort of the deepest band in the world, was just the sort of like geekiness of picking apart the songs. Like, there's so many elements, as we talked about earlier in the week, to like, you know, there's like some doo-wop, there's some girl group kind of elements to the way they are, right? There's some glam, there's even some prog elements. We didn't talk, Kevin, about this. They have a penchant on a lot of the albums for, although they're listed as a separate track, but they're almost like intros to songs. They do that a lot on their records. And that's kind of a proggy thing to do in a way. A
little bit.
You know?
They do it a lot on the next album.
Yeah.
They do it quite a bit on Diver.
There's so many more layers and sort of mixing of genres in this band than I think people even at the face sort of give them credit for.
Doesn't even
know
dawn
what I mean?
On them. Yeah. And you know, it's interesting to me too, listening to you say that, they were one of those bands that split the songwriting credits equally between the four members. They didn't, you know, it wasn't like, you know, Eddie and David Lee were taking the credits on every, you know, like a Jagger Richards or a Lennon McCartney. It was really the REM four-way split of all the songs.
Right.
Although I think for the most part, Eddie wrote the music and Dave wrote the lyrics.
That's right.
He did.
Now there's some, you know, that everybody, you know, has a hand in, but I think for the most part that happened. And that intro you were talking about too, it's one of the interesting things, like on You Really Got Me, you know, Eruption is the intro that gets you sort of into that song. And it's almost like it's part of that song. You know,
that's
it's like if you go back and listen to the Kinks, it's like, wait a minute, where's the beginning? where's the guitar?
That's right.
And there's many of those. There was Tora Tora on one of the albums. And so many, he does that a lot. Which is funny, because when you look at the track listings on a lot of these albums, they're like 9-10 songs, but they aren't even really that many songs. Right, yeah. When you sort of take
45
that into
seconds
account, right?
1 minute, but anyway, and 5 seconds.
But point being, I think as I've gotten older, I've even developed more of an appreciation for Van Halen, which seems, you know, may seem to people as sort of insane. But getting back to the vinyl, a couple of years ago, I was at Dig Records right over here in Leesburg.
Yep.
Going through they have dollar bins.
Yep.
There. And that's usually where I start. And somebody must have just cleaned out their collection and sold it to Dig Records, because I found
all five
of these other albums on vinyl, wow, each marked for a dollar. And as you mentioned, they're in pretty good condition.
Yeah, they're decent shape.
And
man,
all but one has the original
printed inner sleeve.
Mm-hmm. There's only Women and Children First did not have it.
Yeah.
But all of them do. And this is pretty nice. I've got the full vinyl collection.
Man, for that money, that would be the best day ever at the record store. I'd run right out of there.
Let's stick with Fair Warning just real quickly here. Kevin, I think you had another selection we should play.
So this is Love. It's another one of those songs where there's some showcasing involved. There's some bass riffs and some drum riffs in there. And even in the later years, now that Wolfgang, Eddie's son, is playing the bass, this is the song, I think, where he gets like a solo in it. When my baby's on the corner and she's looking so fine, put one and one together and it blow my mind. Man needs love to live, I'm the living proof. Catch that smile and I hit the roof.
So it's pretty poppy, too.
Yeah.
We didn't even get into some of the kind of weirder stuff on this record, but there is some things that really, are more toward where Eddie wanted to take the band. And even though, like I mentioned, it was this album, Fair Warning, was considered by Van Halen standards kind of a letdown at 2 times platinum, a double platinum, but it did also go to number 5 on the charts. So, you know,
yeah,
still a big success,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
There was a Van Halen machine that was at work here.
You know, I'm in high school at this point.
Okay.
And it was one of those things that I think that anytime Van Halen was coming out with an album, it was eagerly anticipated. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was a lot of people like me that just, whatever it was, we ran out and bought it. And before we even knew anything about it.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of their sales are just the fact that we were fans. We wanted to hear what they put out and we were going to love it no matter what, even if it wasn't as good in a lot of cases, we just went out to get it. And I think, in fact, I think Diver Down is another one of those albums. It was in a lot of ways disappointing from the fact that it seems like half the album is, or them doing somebody else's songs.
Cover versions, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's some interesting things about it.
Yep.
And it's different. And I think it's also sort of the last straw for Eddie in the fact that Dave and Ted Templeman win.
That's right.
And they do the hits and they do this stuff to try to, you know, this song was already a hit. So if we redo it, people know it and it's going to keep us at the top of the charts. I think Eddie does the album sort of against his wishes, and it's sort of this is sort of the end of that style of music, really, for them, is Diver Down, and then they go in a completely different direction.
So you've hit upon it exactly. So Fair Warning came out in April 1981, and then Diver Down in April 1982, and this is, again, they're putting out an album a year, and you know Warner's probably demanding it, right? We got to keep the revenue coming in, and as you mentioned, you know, Dave and Ted are in one camp and probably said, okay, Eddie, you had your album. Now it's time for our album.
Yeah.
And that ended up being Diver Down. Diver Down, essentially, you know, it's a fun record. I won't dispute that. But it's not a complete work.
Right.
Really, when you take out all the covers, and I think there's like five. Yeah. Five covers
five
on here.
Covers.
Yeah.
Yes. And some of those intros, there's a couple things that are like intro kind of tracks. Right. There's really only four songs, four like original songs. It's basically an EP worth of new music expanded into to be a full album so that they can make, you know, so they can sell records, right? Now, it did sell well. It sold 4 million as compared to the Fair Warning 2 million.
Back on track.
And it went up to number three. There were three singles released. All the singles were cover songs. There's that.
Says a lot.
You know, it's basically a return to kind of the party record Van Halen. Like, you could put this on at a party and everybody would enjoy it and have a good time, right?
And they did. That's exactly what happened when that album came out. That was really what we did. And I'm going back to sort of my generation.
Yeah.
That when this came out, and it's like, well, we know all these songs, but Van Halen's doing them. So it's a different, it sounds different. They've put their spin on it. This is fun and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's funny because it's like you're saying, Jim, as you look back on these things, you know, you look back on it and you're going, why did we like this? Why didn't we like something new, something that they wrote, something and that kind of thing? And I say, think we were just sort of caught up.
We
in
were
the
16
whole,
years old.
We were. We were very young.
Summer of 82. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I'd like to briefly here to interject, Jim, that at this time, Van Halen was a massive concert attraction, right?
And it was all about going to see their shows.
Yeah, and it wasn't, look at that picture on the back, it's ridiculous. And it wasn't too long at the U.S. festival, right? They played in front of like some record crowd. But, I think part of Spinal Tap, like honestly, you know, has been taken off of what the Van Halen myth is. And especially like, you know, the part about the writer and, you know, backstage and all that. But there's an interesting story about this, you know, legendarily, Van Halen said they wanted a bowl of M&Ms in their backstage area with all the brown M&Ms removed. And I always thought that was because, these guys are just rock stars and they want to do it because it's the most ridiculous thing they can think of. But that actually was not the reason, right?
That's my understanding. Yeah. The story was always like, well, what a bunch of jerks that just have these huge egos. They want to put people through ridiculous tasks. Because they can, right?
That's right. They want some poor person to stand there and pick out the brown M&Ms of a giant bowl of M&Ms.
But supposedly many years later, the real story came out. And actually, this makes a lot of sense.
It does to me.
That they would put it in there in the rider among a bunch of like technical specs. Because the rider originally started as like, these are the tech specs that we need to be able to perform.
To do
and, then it, and then it expanded for a lot of bands into like, you know, the food and drink that they want backstage and all that. But they would put the thing about removing the brown M&Ms in among the tech specs. And then when they would go into their, you know, the backstage room, they would look at the M&Ms first and, you know, first see if they were there.
Yeah.
And then if the brown ones had been removed.
Yeah.
And then that would give them an indication as to whether the venue, the people at the venue had actually read the rider in detail.
And followed it because they had some electrical specs in there and they had crew members who had been electrocuted because of shoddy, you know, set up by the promoter and the concert venue.
And
so this was their way to make sure they actually were doing it.
How huge these productions are, and, you know, how much detail there is in it that, you know, people need to pay attention to. So that would give them a sense. Like if that had been done right, then they could, you know, hang out and they could rest easy. If that had not been done correctly, then they would make sure to check on all the other things, right? Have somebody reinspect it.
Yeah, they would send their people out to make sure nobody was going to get hurt or it was going to work.
So it's actually kind of brilliant.
I thought it was pretty cool when I learned that story,
One last thing I want to say about the vinyl. So again, Diver Down, you know, you mentioned like the back cover has them in front of a big crowd. It's not the artistic cover like before.
No.
And then also another thing that the band did a lot on their records, I don't know if it's all of them or not, they would list the tracks out of order.
Oh, that's interesting. I never really knew that.
Isn't that weird?
It is odd.
Yeah. You know, obviously on the record label itself, it's in the right order, but on the back cover, it'd be listed in a different order.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah.
They're seeing if you're paying attention, Patrick.
Yeah, that's what
it is.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay, so let's get out of here. We're going to move on to Tomorrow, which is the, you know, the big massive album. Do you have a favorite from Diver Down? Is there anything we should play? Maybe we should do one of the covers. We haven't done that yet,
right? You
could
do a cover. I don't necessarily want to close out with this, but the one song that I thought was pretty cool on this album is Big Bad Will is Big Bad Bill Sweet William Now.
That's kind of a cool
because one. Jan Van Halen, Eddie and Alex's dad, play the clarinet on on that song at the end. And so it's like this whole tie of their family. And this is this, you know, they grew up listening to his kind of music.
We could do that.
And so that was part of that song.
It goes back to sort of their, this, whatever this strange appeal they have for like sort of wanting to do like old timey music. In this case, more like a jazz.
It's a jazzy
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which David Lee Roth loves that kind of scat singing, right?
He did it on his solo work. Yeah.
But yeah, they bring in, Eddie and Alex's dad say, dust off the clarinet and come on in and play. Apparently, he was incredibly nervous to do this. And they had to tell him, you know, it's okay to make mistakes on a rock record. It's okay. We do it all the time. All right, we'll close out with that because it's just kind of fun. I was going to say one thing about the covers. At least they pick really good covers for the most part.
That's right.
Sure.
And one of the bands that they were highly influenced by, you can't go wrong with this, is the Kinks. They cover two Kinks songs.
Yeah.
And in this case on Diver Down, Where Have All the Good Times Gone, which is just a tremendous song. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. All right. So this is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm Kevin Spain.
And tomorrow, we'll talk to you again.
If your wife doesn't kick me out.
Well, way down yonder in Louisville, lived a cat named Big Bad Bill. I wants to tell you, the cat was rough and tough, he could shut his stuff. Had the whole town scared to death. When he walked by, they all held their breath. He's a fighting man, sure enough. And then Bill got himself a wife. Now he leads a different life. Big Bad Bill is Sweet William now. Married life done changed him somehow. Town used to fear. Now they all call him Sweet Papa Willie dear. Stronger than Samson, I declare. Till a brown-skinned woman's bobbed his hair. Big Bad Bill don't fight anymore. No, no, no. He's doing the dishes, mopping up that floor. Yes, he is. Barely used to go out drinking, looking for a fight. Now I gotta see that sweet woman every night. Big Bad Bill is Sweet William now. I think my parents let me go to concert by myself at 14.
No, KV's a lucky man.
He is a lucky man. I didn't get to go at 14.
Yeah, and especially see the Dave era Halen lineup. That's pretty good, man.
That would have been good.
That might have actually frightened me at 14.